more or less mounted infantry. The actual true cavalry work is fighting on horses, charging and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
We didn't see anything yet either. But the cavalry corps work is mounted infantry. You go from place to place, or you patrol in possible places for horses, but you would patrol it and you would, when there's action, you dismount and you find a safe place and start shooting from there. So
there was no real set down plan of attack, is that correct?
Oh yes, yes there was later on. You had
actual tactics and...
Oh yeah, later on we went through from into Palestine. We, went to the big, after Allenby inspected the troops, he said, I want this, that, and the other thing. You want a railway through, built through to Jerusalem, which we did, and you want a water pipeline from the Sweetwater Canal, which we got that going, and you get thousands and thousands of Egyptian labor corps working like ants there. Anyhow, we finally got ready for this big campaign to get started off.
So this is what, going to, from Palestine or going into Palestine or what? I'm not sure about
that. No, we were in Palestine then, but the...
This is 1917.
Yeah. And the main Turkish line was from Gaza on the coast to inland, about 45 miles inland to Beersheba. The strongly held of the whole Turkish army. Very, very strong on a hill. Well, twice we got to the neck in Gaza before my time there. And finally, I think the general in charge there got the sack and Allenby came out to take over.
I see. This is where the inspection came from.
And he wasn't going to do a thing until he was down shore and he got what he wanted. There were ships, ammunition, and everything, men.
Well, was there any shortages now at this time, do you recall? Were there any shortages of equipment and ammunition and things like this?
I don't think so. Not as I know of, no. No, I don't think so.
You in particular didn't do without anything, is that correct?
No. There's always a certain amount of shortage of water, but we got had to go easy on that. But anyhow, we started on this campaign to Jerusalem, which confirmed that first of all we got to take Gaza. Now Gaza on the coast, very strongly held, and I wish I had a map, I could explain to you better. Anyhow, and Beersheba was on the right, like 40 miles, 45 miles away. Now, we were on the flank, just opposite Beersheba. Now, Allenby was a great bluffer. He'd bluff the Turks down the, what he would, how are you going to take the line, break the line? And so, the Turks probably figured that that actually Gaza would be the focal point where we make the attack, because it's an important point, you see.
Right.
And so what he did, he sneaked all the cavalry, he posted under cover of darkness, around Beersheba, 45 miles away, all in the wadis there, and we weren't allowed to move out of daylight, we were seen at night to all, and then he'd make all the bluffs going, thousands of troops going to Gaza. What he used our camel corps for was kicking up a dust.
Oh.
at daytime, we travel from all different directions, all making for Gaza, making as much dust we could, you see. Because then we just allowed one or two Turkish planes in to see, because we had superiority of air we do all there. We allowed a few in just to see, enough to throw through bombs at us. So it looks like we were going to reinforce Gaza, you see. And this went on night and day for a long time. And back we go at night time, snatch a few hours sleep, up we go again in another direction,
just
all
to,
going
just
towards...
to create this dust.
All going to Gaza, making as much dust as we could, you see. And then we... In the meantime, they were reinforcing all around all the cavalry around Beersheba, kept in the dark. Anyhow, when the time came for the attack, a terrific bombardment of Gaza. Every darn gun in the world was going off. Just rolled for hours at a time. Turks said, well, here we are, yeah, this is the fact. They all rushed for Gaza, see. And while they were rushing for Gaza, we stuck around the corner and took Beersheba way behind the Turks there. And if we'd only got there a little bit, we held up the water again, you see, we could have surrounded the whole Turkish army. But then from there on, we'll just go all the time. And we'd fight the snipe here and snipe there and get on the camera, where we go then.
It sounds very exciting. Was it an exciting time?
It was, yes. It's not exciting, all right.
Now, it says, you also say that you had a call from Lawrence, the infamous Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah.
First question, and it may sound a little silly. In the film, I would think you saw the film Lawrence of Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
How accurate, now I'm not worried about the storyline here, but were the conditions depicted, was it like that on the desert and the camel, or was that
pretty well exaggerated.
Pretty Hollywood.
Hollywood style.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you one big mistake they made. If I was there for advice, I'd have stopped that right away. Aram is a particularly tall man, that's your height. And Lawrence is very opposite, but I on that lamp.
Yeah.
The two together, you know. Yeah. I get a picture from walking away back to somewhere in Cairo.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, Lawrence is higher and taller than the
no, they had Peter O'Toole as Lawrence.
Peter O'Toole, because he was a tall fellow.
Yeah. Oh, well. Now, you had a phone call from Lawrence and also met Lawrence. Now, what are the circumstances?
Well, I didn't actually meet him, because after all, he was a field major and I was a second lieutenant in one
place. Well, okay, fair enough. But you saw him and, by golly, well, it says here that you were in Jordan in 1917. And Lawrence of Arabia was calling, though.
Well, I was just at an outpost someplace, and I was ordering out for the time. Well, an ordering out for the job was to stay in camp while other doings outside were going on, and he was responsible for the goings-on in the camp, take all messages and things like that, you see.
Correct.
I got this call on the buzzer, a field phone, and I said who I was, ordering officer. I said, well, you got your map, number so and so, wherever it was, that's that one there. I said, yes. He said, well, get some red pencil or chalk or something and mark the places I'll call to you. And these places are serviceable for wheel traffic and other, and camels and various other things, you see. Because a lot of this country east of there, that's all as east of Jordan, that was extraordinary territory there, horses might do it, and camels couldn't, kind of thing, and infantry couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to make a mark this map, which is suitable for
each particular wing. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was down there, and then later on.
Well, what was that like talking to Lawrence on the phone? This was Lawrence himself calling. He didn't have a flunky doing it for him.
Oh, God, no. He did everything himself. No, I didn't know him or only thing is that...
Well, did he have the reputation then, or was that much later?
No, it was a mystery. Everybody thinking that some Englishman was getting a lot of gabs together and, you know, thought he was kind of a bit of a fool, you see.
But, dressing like an Arab, etc.
Yeah. Anyhow, apparently what he did, according to the books I read about him, he got all these Arab tribes together and got them, well, fighting among themselves. And he got them all organized under... So, anyhow, in the meantime, helping Allenby on the east, Allenby's flank, on the east across Jordan, was Lawrence and his thousands of Arabs. Apparently very undisciplined. I never saw any regiment of them. They're all over the damn country everywhere. Every man on his own.
What were the relations like between the Camel Corps and the Arabs, Lawrence?
Oh, we didn't meet much. No, we were a little talk he gave us for one of our stunts. He said it was to not to fraternize for the...
Now, Lawrence gave you this talk, yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah, not to fraternize his men because they didn't understand us.
Well, what was it like now? What were the circumstances around Lawrence and this talk? He just walked in one day, or what? How did this work?
How do you mean?
Well, you say that Lawrence gave a talk to you and other...
Oh, no, he was going on this expedition with us. You see, he used us for a bolus. We were lent back to
Well, what are the circumstances around all this? You see, I'm very unclear about this.
Well, Lawrence had a certain amount of stunts he did, like busting up rail, pulling down telegraph wires, getting little Turkish outposts, and that kind of thing. So, he's just stinging them all like a bunch of...
guerrilla warfare type thing,
like a bunch of hornets. And he wanted us to, or he borrowed us, to go on one, two of his stunts, you see. One is blowing up wells and also pulling down wire, telegraph wire, things like that, and busting up rails. The little Turkish railroad went down to Medina. So, anyhow, we went on one of these things, and before we went, Lawrence gave a little talk of what not to do, what to do, you see. And he didn't speak long, he just said that we not to fraternize our men, because they don't understand Arabs, and Arabs didn't understand him, you see. So, anyhow, we didn't. We saw one of I spoke one or two of them, but they didn't speak English. And, but I guess they knew we were there to help. The thing is, I think they kind of resented a lot of foreigners coming in doing their job, or helping do their job.
Were you and your fellows impressed with Lawrence, or...?
Well, I was saying that we'd only heard of him in that he's some mysterious fellow getting a bunch of Arabs together, otherwise nobody knew anything about anything else. And when I saw him, well, I, except for his face, you would...
Hello.
Are you talking on the thing now?
Yeah, I'll turn it off.
Turn off.
We're back on now, sir. You were saying that Lawrence is a very mysterious fellow, and you just heard about him. Is it something about his face?
His face?
Yes.
Well, tell you the truth, when I first saw him, in fact, the only time I'd ever seen him, was always an Arab uniform, Arab dress. I never saw him in uniform.
He's always in Arab dress, like full dress, or just a British uniform with the headpiece, or what?
No, just the Arab dress, whole complete outfit. He always dressed like it in his campaign. But,
you'd mentioned there was something about his face that,
I know, let's take much notice of his face. If I remember rightly, I sort of felt that, who is this insignificant little person talking to us as we know the whole damn thing? He has a real pretty voice, nice, quiet tone. So I think we resented him. And using us, too, after all, we're helping him out.
And he told you what you were going to do and not to, to stay away from his crew and just lay down the law.
Of course, he said at the time we were running across a lot of his men all over the country, but he says, don't fraternize. He says they don't understand you. Which we didn't, of course.
Now, with this campaign with Lawrence, now what, you were just to run around and pull down telegraph wires and break up railroads and things like this, is this correct?
Oh, yes, and he took a lot of Turkish posts, you know, especially later on when I wasn't in there. But further on, he went right through, I believe, so according to the books I read, it goes right to Aleppo. Mm-hmm. It's not Aleppo, but Damascus.
Now, you were with Lawrence, but on loan for a while, then what happened then? Back to Palestine, or what?
We were on two or three of those stunts. Now the one, another one we were on was, which is mentioned in his Seven Pillars of Wisdom. You read that book?
No, I haven't read it.
Was to an attack on Amman. That's the capital of King Hussein's capital now, Amman. Right. Well, we went there. Everything went wrong there from the start.
You're kidding.
We started off, we crossed Jordan, we had a wait at the bridge, which is now known as Allenby Bridge, but the engineer just built a bridge of boats, what do you call them there?
Well, boat bridge thing?
And we were one of the first troops over there. We were at the top of the hill there. Guarding the entrance in case of an attack by Turks, you see. And we didn't know at the time, nor did anyone else know, we were only about a mile from where those scrolls were found.
Well, the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yeah. And I was only, we were only about 2 days we were there guarding while they were building this bridge. And by God, I only had taken time from the scrolls myself.
So.
These things happen. Anyhow, and we went across this bridge. I got somewhere, I got a snapshot of us walking across the bridge. And we started off, and we got up the hill, the Moor Mountains. They were on about 4,000 feet above sea level. Mm-hmm. And this was in January, I think, and it started to snow. And all we had was thin equipment, tropical equipment,
mm-hmm.
one blanket, one waterproof sheet, and pith helmets, things like that. Okay, thanks. And my keys.
Lost the keys.
Thank you. So, where was I? Oh, yeah. We were, the train of thought's all gone now.
Turn it back and we'll see where you're. Now, we're saying it was starting to snow?
Yeah. We had this thin tropical equipment on us, and because we were going up this slippery, it was wet, sticky snow, slippery snow, and going up these steep trails, incidentally one of those trails I marked red there, and the camels started to slip. Well, a camel on a slippery sea is absolutely useless. It's worse than a tire in the snow without a snow tires. We slipped all over here, so we and we were all falling off for sleep in our camels. We'd been the second night out, and no sleep at all. And it was dark and snowing and wet. Everybody was so damn fed up with the whole thing. We were cursing the camel, we were cursing the lawn, and everything. Anyhow, we finally got within distance of a man. Incidentally, we've been sniped at nearly all the time, different times. Pop up and don't know who was sniping at us at all.
Turkish troops or Arabs under Turkish control? Or?
Yeah, there were probably Turkish scouts out there too. Anyhow, we just about got into the man when the order came to pull out, retire, see? I got to heave a sigh of relief. We'd have never taken that place, it was full of Turks. And they were bombarding us, guns from the fortress or whatever it was at my man there, sniper.
You wouldn't know what date around we're talking about, eh? What month and year?
That was after Jerusalem fell. That was end of 17, I think.
Or, very end of 17.
Or beginning of, no, the beginning of 18.
Beginning of 1918.
Yeah, it was in January, yeah. It was a winter month, I know. Anyhow, we got back safely and sound. And we had a few casualties, not much, sir. And I was had put in for a leave, hadn't been on leave for 3 years.
Oh, gosh.
And my leave came through. Oh, that's good. before the leave came through, we were sent back to re-equip. We had been in the desert in Palestine a long time, the equipment getting shoddy and everything else, and we had a lot of various casualties, sickness and things like that. And we went to the Suez Canal, a place called Serapium, south of Ismailia. And it was August, the hottest damn time of the year. Oh, it was hot there in the Suez Canal. And we just lazed around there. And our general, who had a kind of a sense of humor, he was on the headquarters at the name of that place, I've gotten, I just said it. And he said, we'll send you down some bombs to keep the boys up and practice bombs. Because his idea was to get some fish. So we spent a long time sort of, we threw mill bombs into the air and hauled out a bunch of fish.
You'd go over well with conservationists now, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah. He asked us later on, was the fishing good? Anyhow, when I was down there, my leave came through. I'd put on leave before, and we had a big roaster there, a big, who's next on leave, and I was just too late to go on a certain ship, you see, but I was put on the first or second of the next roaster, you see. And that ship I might have gone on went down, torpedoed, and I was always missing shipwrecks. Anyhow...
Did you feel you were living a charmed life at this point, or...?
Anyhow, my last... finally got on the ship, you see.
Mm-hmm.
We crossed to... went to Alexander and crossed that to Taranto, not Toronto, Taranto, that's
Taranto,
in the
yes.
Here of Italy. And we took 10 days to go on a train from Taranto to Cherbourg, north of France. The whole thing could be a two-day trip anyway. But we were a leave train, and we had to sidetrack everything coming towards the front.
Of course.
And we didn't know where we were, how long we were going to go. We'd start one day, and train would stop. Didn't know how long we were going to start, so we had to... we went out and hung a little mirror on the post and start to shave. Then, oh, Lord, we had to go. And then we'd stop again, and we'd start and stop, and... It took 10 days to get up there.
Well, how long was your leave?
Well, that's the funny part of it. My leave was 10 days in Canada. And I took a hell of a lot of 10 days to get to Canada. More like 20 days. If it had been 10 days, I would have never got to Canada.
You would have got out of Egypt.
So I took a lot of 10 days to get to Canada, believe me.
Well, then when you went to Toronto and then up Italy into the north of France.
Yeah.
And then what?
Well, then I crossed over onto. Now, to get back up my ship to. Leave ship to Southampton, was probably.
Oh, you went right through France, then back into England, is that correct?
Oh, yes, back to England, yes.
This is what, 1918?
Yeah, 1918, August, September, I think. Anyhow, I. went to Baptist Seminar, and hardly anybody had come back, because the war wasn't over. And I then knew my wife before Seminar. So we got married in Brandon, Manitoba. We got married in, and that was September the 11th, September 11th, 1918. And this coming September was 60 years.
Tremendous.
That long. Anyhow, and then I got making most of this 10 days to get to Canada. I had all kinds of excuses not to go back right away, you see. And the war was expected to here any minute, the war would be over. So I said, what's the difference between going back now? Everything's finished practically. Anyhow, I finally got a ship back to, and on the 11th of November, 1918, an armistice was there. I was mid-ocean coming back.
You're in mid-ocean going back to Europe?
Going back to Europe, yeah.
Gee.
I went back myself. I didn't do the... I left the wife and...
Back in Salmon Arm with the property and things, mm-hmm. Yes. What was this change like then, coming back into Canada? Did you notice a tremendous change in Canada when you returned?
Only the change I noticed, which annoyed me immensely, was the... While I was away, the cows got in and chewed up my apple trees.
How did you handle streetcars after being in the desert for so long? I mean, London and places like that must have been just terrible.
Handle what?
Handle with streetcars and people on the roads and
places. Oh, well, it didn't annoy me. Shamanam's pretty primitive those days.
No, I meant when you're coming back from after the desert and the change.
Yes.
How did you, you went back, you were in mid-Atlantic when the armistice was signed, and then when you landed in England, what did they do with you then?
Well, I went to a cavalry depot in Aldershot.
But were you going back to the Lord Strathcona Horse, or were you still with the Imperial Camel Corps, or what was your
No, I wore the Camel Corps badge still, I was a Camel Corps uniform, and there were a lot of cavalrymen there, was either at a loose end, some had come back, some hadn't gone anywhere, they were young fellows. And I was there, I suppose, a month or 6 weeks in Aldershot. Well, it was, they gave me a small command, but just sort of half training and half half loafing, mostly loafing.
And then how long did you remain in Aldershot, do you recall?
4 or 5 weeks, I think.
And then back to Canada?
Yeah. And then finally, my discharge came through. I got the civilian clothes in, and I went back to Canada. Now, in the meantime, my wife came over.
Oh, your wife came over to join?
Later on, yes. After I'd sort of settled in Aldershot, she came over. And then we went back together later on. I can't think of the date I went back with her.
Would it be 1919, or...?
Oh, 1919 then. It was... I know. I was discharged on April the 1st, 1919, at the Crystal Palace in London. Yeah, I know that now, April the 1st. And then shortly after that, after we sort of got things together, then we left. Left to Canada again. I've never been back since.
Never been back since?
No. This country suits me, so I... And a couple of years ago, I applied for a Canadian citizenship, and I'm now a Canadian citizen.
Very good. How did you feel when the Second War broke out?
Well, the Second War broke out, I joined one of these funny regiments again in Brandon, Manitoba, but it consisted of all the old sweats, you can call them sweats, and I forget now what the outfit was, some... And there was just sort of training, you know, in the drill halls, and I was hoping for getting some kind of a government job, like prisoner, looking after prison, things like that. But nothing came through, and I was sort of, stupid putting on a uniform and twice a week drilling in a drill hall, doing a lot of this infantry work that I didn't understand, and neither did I like at all. And so I gave my resignation and pulled out. That's my record. I didn't get a medal for that.
You didn't get a medal for that one, eh?
But last year I got a Queen Jubilee medal.
Very good.
Yeah. Somebody here, some Paul around here, gave me some recommends. I had something got a notice from Oliver. Oh, sure, it's here. I'm going to turn it off before you do any more talking.
Oh, okay. Turn back on. So you were awarded the Queen's Jubilee Medal. I say you were awarded the Queen's Jubilee Medal.
Yeah.
That's great.
What for I don't know.
What for you don't know. How did you feel about your experiences now in the Camel Quarantine? Looking back, do you think it...
Well, I feel that I didn't so much talk about it here. People, I wear a camel call badge. I'll show you that too in my beret. And I wear it.
Ah, yes. Oh, that's.
I get so many stops in the street. What's that badge you're wearing?
Oh,
as Imperial Council, but. I don't know, people seem to see something mysterious about it, but after all, they're...
Oh, that's great, sir. Well, I think you must remember, too, though, that how many, you know... Gosh, there's not that many now from the Second War, let alone from the First War, let alone from the Camel Corps.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
back at the end of the war... London, England was full of those fellows. Egypt was full of them, all over the down country, but not out here, because there were no Canadians in that, you see. There were Australians, New Zealanders.
Right.
Indians. Now, we had an Indian Camel Corps.
Mm-hmm.
We had an Indian Camel Corps with us, but they are totally different. The Bikaner Camel Corps, they're called. That's the desert part of northwest India. And they were huge camels, enormous things. And they had a saddle like a horse, but double. One would carry a wounded man on, or equipment, and he used stirrups on it. And I ran across quite a few of them. I never rode one of those camels. I didn't think I was in on them. But they were huge things, enormous camels.
Right,
eh? Ours are smaller camels. But they were going known as the Bikaner Camel Corps. And I met one or two of the fellows there. many officers here. There were English officers, the rank and file were all natives. And on one occasion, the Maharaja of Bikaner came over to visit us down this. I met him there, to one of these millionaire fellows, you know. Yes. Used to be in India.
Yes, of course.
But they weren't brigade officers, they didn't go with us at all. I don't know what their job was anyway.
What were mess conditions like for an officer, a young lieutenant? Were they palatial at all? Were they very, very good? Strictly average? Well, anywhere. Is there
Imperial Camel Corps was...
Mm-hmm. In the Camel Corps.
Oh, well, no, we had our... we had all kinds of men there. All kinds of them. We had, when the Buckingham was ours, we had a whole bunch of those Rothschilds. Rothschilds were rolling with money, those birds were. They're out of my reach altogether. But we had all conditions of men, officers and everything else. I ran across a lot of Australian officers, nice fellows, rough cut diamonds, you know, but. Really fine fellows. New Zealanders were too, and so were South Africans. No blacks anyway, because all whites.
All whites?
Yeah.
Was it a good experience?
Oh, yes, you better know. It's a very good experience. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Thank you very much, sir.
That concludes it, eh?
I think so. Thank you.